All right, everyone, welcome to another episode of Free For All. I am your host, Big John. And as always, right here, Thursday night, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. out on the West Coast, I am joined by my friend and co-host, Mr. Hody Johns. Hody, how are you feeling tonight, sir?
Well, I'm doing well, thank you. I just started working out again, got myself on a strict diet. I always let that weight balloon up quite a bit, and then there's like a limit. So I'm on the way back down. So I'm proud of myself, but I'm also in severe agony. And the proud of myself actually outweighs the pain. So I actually am good, and I mean it.
That's good. I'm glad to hear that. Take it from someone who is probably twice your age, former wrestler, former football player in high school. Don't work out. It's a sucker's game. You never catch up. Take advice from Big John. Lead a sedentary life. That's the key to happiness, Hody. Lead a sedentary life.
The gamers were right.
You're correct, sir. All right, everyone. As we said, this is Free For All, Libertarian Talk Show. Right here on Grumblings Media, grumblingsmedia.com. You can catch us on YouTube, Rumble, Facebook, X, of course. If you have any questions during the show, you'd like to pop them up on the screen, have a little interaction with ourselves and our guest who's coming on shortly, feel free to do so. Just one request, no four-letter words or things of that nature. I'll be happy to read your comments, but I will not put them on the screen if they are all, at all dirty. Let's play by FCC rules, loath as we are to bend to the will of the state, Hody. Does that sound about fair?
Sounds great to me.
All right. So we have a guest scheduled. We're going to give her some time to join us here. But until we do, let's start out with our initial last topic first until we get to that point, Hody. One of the things, obviously, this past week that has gotten a lot of attention in a lot of different circles, MAGA circles, liberal circles, libertarian circles, is the disposition of the Epstein case, right? What happened to these files? Who's in them? Why the secrecy? Why the misdirections? Why the confusion? And Hody, I wanted to ask you, first of all, for your general thoughts on that, but also wanted to get your feelings contextually. I touched on this subject on Liberty Lens, which is up on the site. Let me give you another whorish plug. Liberty Lens with myself and Mike Tremont. We talk about this more in depth. But the premise there is, are the Epstein files, the Epstein case, symptomatic of both the power and the perils of populism? Not individualism, populism. And I want to talk about it in that case, because look, let's face it, none of us know what's really going on with the Epstein files, the Epstein case. We all have our ideas, we all have our suppositions and all that, but actual hard evidence, you could go either way, right? But let me ask you politically, how do you think why is this playing out the way it has with the MAGA base? You've got two FBI guys who made a small living in part on the conspiracy theories around liberals hiding the Epstein files because obviously the Clintons and Bill Gates were all on it. You have an attorney general, Pam Bondi, who said, hey, I got the U.S. attorney in the Southern District, the most important legal district in the country, to resign because I think he's holding out on us. He's got Epstein papers he doesn't want to give me, and I'm going to send a car there, and we're going to get him on my desk. We'll get him out to you in 2 weeks. Trust me. We'll get it out to you in 2 weeks. That was back in March. Now we're told those files don't exist. Big Daddy himself has said, why are you guys wasting time on this? There's people dying in Texas, for God's sake. Why are we worried about the Epstein files? This is just another liberal Democrat hoax. So clearly, beyond the actual facts of the case, beyond the actual whodunit and what happened, which, by the way, I'm not minimizing. These are horrible crimes that are being alleged here, right? Talk to me about politically where this is lining up right now.
You know, it's tough when we talk about when you want it in the context of populism. Trump is done being a populist, and people might say, "Well, how can that be? Well, he got elected. It's over. He's not running again. He used the populism to get what he wanted, and now he's running things the way he wants to. He's already referred to the people that believe in the Epstein files as his past supporters. All caps. These were my past supporters. He's done with you. He doesn't care if his popularity goes down to 20, 13, 5%. He's in charge. He's the boss. You know, it doesn't matter. He's already with this stuff. He doesn't even care if he gets impeached anymore because he's already passed the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. He's paid all of his cronies out. He's gotten all his guys the money that they needed to make. Done all that insider fun stuff with all the tariffs where you see all the right wingers suddenly be like, oh, my portfolio just jumped up $5 billion before I sold out. Well, you know, how about that? You know, it's over, right? Like, he's done with that part of his life.
Let me push back on you a little bit on that assertion. I don't think he is done with it. I think he postures that he is, right? But I think he walks back a lot of stuff while doing his typical PR that he's not. For example, blustered a lot the other day, yesterday, I think. Yeah. No, I'm sorry, on Wednesday. Yeah, yesterday. Today's Thursday, right? He blustered a lot about firing Jerome Powell. Then in the time it took him to fly overseas to a meeting, the markets had tanked, and he came out and said, well, maybe I won't fire him. Maybe I'll keep him around and watch the markets rebound. Because I think there was a lot of people who gave him a lot of grief. A lot of, you know, then he came out and said, well, whoever appointed this guy is an idiot. I can't believe he was appointed. And, of course, everyone trotted out the tapes of him nominating Powell to be Fed chair. So, that to me, that's an example of he actually does care. Like, he pretends that he doesn't. And, of course, we have all the times he would slap these ridiculous tariffs on our trading partners, wait a week or two, and then all of a sudden it's like, I'm going to ease up on him. Why? Because I see inflation going up. I see the bond markets collapsing. I see the U.S. dollar, which a lot of people don't talk about, Hody. The U.S. dollar has lost a lot of its value currency-wise in the market. So that means the buying power of the dollar is also going down, especially for foreign goods. So I think he is still a populist. He still peddles in conspiracy theories. He still fosters a distrust of institutions, which, of course, is part of populism, right? Like that, and this is what perhaps is a siren song to a lot of libertarians, right? Like he positions himself as the guy who's going to break the system. He's the monkey wrench in the gears of the system. Now, I think he's still, I'll push back. I think he's still a populist. I just don't know if he cares to hide it anymore. Because don't forget, as ludicrous as it may sound to me or you, his Project 2025 overlords are already making noise that they're going to file lawsuits designed to get him in for a third term. They want to keep him in there until he croaks. So is he really giving up on populism? I don't know. I would push back a little bit on that.
I mean, I'm just looking at what is and giving you my best guess. Like you
right,
said,
right, right, yeah.
We're all just analyzing here.
Yeah.
But the Epstein files, he's just done with the, you know, he's done with the lie. He was always in the Epstein files. It was clear he had gone on the Lolita Express 7 times. And I'm sorry, you don't fly on a plane by that name for a nice dinner with a good friend, right? I mean, this is the Wall Street Journal just published their. There are some findings they got a hold of where he's talking to Epstein, where he's given this kind of whole like, hey, I know we can't talk about it, but we're good friends. And you know what I mean? Wink, wink. You know why?
Right.
We're checking out what that is for those who haven't seen it. It's the Wall Street Journal. And that is obviously scathing. This has been information we've known for a while. And I guess if I'm going to give pushback to you, the idea that Trump is a wrench in any kind of machine, what machine? Everything's functioning fantastically. He is the FBI doesn't like him, I guess, is like a personality trait, but those are individuals. The machine is the FBI, and he has just unleashed their power with the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. They have unprecedented reign to surveil people without warrants, to go after immigrants or people that they suspect might have filed their taxes wrong. Basically, every legal citizen, the FBI can find a way to surveil you for whatever reason that they would like to. And this is huge for them. Now,
just to throw it in there, he's also gotten his wish with ICE. He's mobilizing the state on domestic soil. ICE, thanks to the One Big Bloated Bill, is now the 14th largest active army in the world. It's got a bigger budget and more resources allocated to it than the U.S. Marines. I think there was a list that said, hey, if you added them all up, ICE would be bigger than the armies of France, Spain, and Portugal or something like that. You know, I agree with you on that. I'm saying the perception that he was anti-deep state, the perception that he's a monkey wrench. But the truth of the matter is, you're right, it's just that he's taking the apparatus and bending it towards his will. But that's about it. But go ahead. Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt you too much.
No, it's all right. I mean, and that's an important clarification that he's not actually a monkey wrench or whatever. But I do think that he's kind of done, I guess to me, from what I see, him calling them his past supporters so quickly, him humiliating them, he doesn't appear to care on this one. And now maybe the big difference with this one compared to the other populist stuff is that he really can't get these things released or he's in a lot of trouble, right? Like, and so I think he can't reverse course on this one. If he reverses course on this one, he releases his name. You know, when they released the Epstein files, phase one, as they called it, by the way, to all those right-wing grifters, he took out all the flight logs that has his name on them, and everything else was released. You know, so like he was hiding something from the get-go, and that was obvious. And now that it's here, I think that if we're going to say he's still a populist, then he is doing it. This is one thing that he just simply can't cave the popular demand on. It doesn't matter how unpopular it is. Even if it gets to like 99% of people want them released, how do you release you say, I'm a pedophile to the world, right? I mean, it's just, there's a certain point where you just kind of can't.
Well, so the question is, and I see our guest is in the green room, so we'll get her on in just a moment. But just to wrap this up, let me ask you this. We've already seen the MAGA social media circles, the echo chambers, have fractured a bit. It started very subtly with Vivek Ramaswamy bowing out over immigration. Then it kind of picked up steam a little bit with the two Elon Musk blowouts and the threatening of Musk saying, hey, we're going to primary these people. You had some more libertarian-leaning Republicans like Massey and Rand Paul saying, what's up with the debt? Why are we growing the debt? Now, while I'll readily admit, Trump is like Gotti on this one. He's Teflon, man. A lot of it's just not sticking to him. It's sticking to MAGA. And I'm wondering how much. So let me ask you this. Let's assume Big Daddy skates on this. No matter what happens with the Epstein files, he skates. People don't turn on him for whatever reason, which is, I guess, a skill. What happens to the rest of MAGA, though? Do you think it fractures? Do you think they stay together? Do they take it out on Vance? Or do they take it out in the midterms in 2026?
Yeah, I think right now what you have with MAGA, and this is somebody who used to be in the GOP, we were trying to unite and coalesce people over policies. And Trump is a cult of personality, not set of policies. Like you mentioned with the tariffs, he'll change day to day, right? Like there is no real policy about it. You know, there is no, he said, so a fun fact is I was reading through the conservative blogs. He promised to end the wars was his second most reiterated promise and to begin more wars as his fifth most reiterated promise during the campaign. So there is no policy here when we talk about war, economy, whatever. Like it's whatever he says it is. He says he'd be the most pro-choice president of all time. as a matter of fact. Right. And then also is like, oh yeah, I'm going to be pro-life whenever it suits him. You know, this guy is making Mitt Romney look downright consistent when it comes to flip-flopping. Right. And so, you know, without that, I think what's going to happen is MAGA's base is going to look and they're going to do one of two things. Probably a combination of both, but one is say, hey, we actually have to gather, like, what are some principles here that we can actually get behind? Anti-immigration is a good one that they actually are pretty consistent about. Anti-trans, you know, definitely into the bigotry stuff. I think those are policies that they can actually get concrete. Right. Or they just go to a different personality, right? That somebody steps into that shadow. Now, I don't know who that's going to be at this moment. It could be Vance. He certainly set himself up that way. He certainly had the president's back, no matter how bad this gets. Even he has videos going around saying that was one of his top priorities, was releasing these Epstein files. And
hilarious. Know, yeah, he was on Theo Vaughn's podcast, and I think he was on Rogan's podcast, and he essentially said, I'd love to see these files released. And Hody, it's almost like they don't all, you know, they make a show out of those cabinet meetings every week or every other week, right, where they all come in and kiss Trump's ass a little bit and how wonderful he is and all the, you know, the economy's booming no matter what's been happening. But beyond that show of unity, they almost seem like they don't have their stories together. Like, one will say the files don't exist, and the other one says they exist, but chunks of it are missing, sort of like the Watergate tapes, you know? And then there's people who say they do exist, but there's stuff in there that could hurt innocent people, so we're not going to release them, which, of course, why don't you release them redacted? You know, publish the names of the guilty and keep the innocent protected, the victims protected. So it seems to me like they don't even have their story straight, like they don't have the same PR person working for them. And to your point, some of these social media grifters, like the Benny Johnsons, like the Laura Loomers, DC Dranos, Insurrection Barbies, you know, a lot of the people who did show up, as you mentioned, in that photo op with that stupid binder as if they had, you know, found some, you know, lost text of wisdom, you know, they're starting to turn on Trump because I think they're more sensitive to the swings of the people they're grifting, right? So it's, you know, hey, we were all in on this conspiracy stuff, but now that we're finding out that you guys are part of the conspiracy, part of the deep state, now Benny Johnson is cheerleading, I want the Epstein files. And you do see this division, right? So a lot of the more, like, who is that, Cat Turd and those guys and Eagleman and those people, they're like, hey, we love President Trump. We trust him. We love President Trump. And, of course, you could go see all the little memes of the what was said 3 years ago by the same people and what they're saying now. 3 years, it was like Biden protects pedophiles. Democrats love child abusers. And now it's like, trust Trump. There is no Epstein files. Trust them. We trust press. 1,000% we trust these guys. So I do see almost like an internal fault line forming around this, and believe it or not, it may be the thing that has the least amount of data available that does it. Like, you would think more concrete things like tariffs bad and watching bond markets crumble might change their minds, but no, it's the QAnon stuff, it's the conspiracy stuff that's actually what's driving this split. And I know you have no basis in fact for anything you might say to the question I'm about to ask you, but do you think this will be enough between, let's assume the Epstein files are not handled to the satisfaction of the MAGA base. Between this and Musk potentially strategically sniping primaries, do the Republicans lose control of the House in the midterms and the Senate?
Yeah, whatever they've got up for grabs is in a lot of trouble. And this is – now, here's the thing. This is pretty common for presidents to lose their next – they do – we've talked about this before. They spend their capital. It gets spent. They pass something big. Then they lose control because people don't like what they spent. You know, that's the payment, right? So Trump has made this gambit already. The one big beautiful bill is a problem. And that was, he expended all his capital to do that. Now with the Epstein list, he's got no credibility among a lot of people. And these are, now the politicians are going to remain somewhat loyal to him because, frankly, there's not usually a lot of blowback for saying, oh, I support this guy and he ended up stinking, right? Like, it just doesn't happen. But for the grifters, yeah, you're seeing a lot of fracture there because they need to care about where their money supply is coming from. And right. They've got to weigh this out. We saw this happen with Biden as well with the senility, right? That they were getting their talking points. Those who have read Original Sin, it's a good one. They were getting their talking points from Biden and the White House. And they were like, say this. And you could see in real time when they were like, I need to care about my money more than I care about following you for money. You know, that if I keep repeating these lies, it's going to catch up with me. And so what we've seen here, I mean, literally just last month, John, we saw like 20 of the biggest influencers post the exact same message for the right wing.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And now post Epstein, that number is down. Like, they'll post that same message, but it's down to like 3. And that's because Trump, for all the good that he does and all the popularity he brings, you still get your money from your Patreons, right? You still get your money from your YouTube views. And if they think you're part of the pedo clan, if they think you're part of the Epstein problem, then they're going to take off. You know, they can't expend political capital the way Trump can, you know? So I think that's what's kind of going on here. I think Trump and I think they all lose badly, as is common, but I think it's a little worse because of the Epstein.
Right.
If I had to guess. I mean, I would imagine you'd think the same thing, right? He's got to pull a crazy rabbit out of his hat to keep the House and Senate, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, I have a sense the Senate might flip, but to be fair, I base that solely on the fact that a lot of their votes have come down to Vance casting the deciding vote. But, and this is where I'll admit this to the folks out there, I haven't sat down and studied exactly who's up for re-election in what states and whatnot for 2026. So because of that particular alignment, the Senate may not be in play despite all this. My guess, though, is that if you're a senator in a state that isn't as radically MAGA, say, that you might be a little worried, especially, and here's the key, especially if you voted for the One Big Beautiful Bill and you may have a target on your back from Elon Musk, which I still think he'd be more effective not running a political party and actual candidates, but follow the playbook that MAGA followed, which is primary vulnerable Republicans, to get a Republican that signs a pledge to vote your way, you know, sort of like that Liberty pledge that the guy in Pennsylvania Chase, I can't remember his name now, the Republican strategist did, you know, get Liberty candidates under the Republican banner. So I think that's more of a likely possibility. The House, of course, they're all up for re-election in 2026. And I think that might be vulnerable. But I don't know if, what is it, an 8-seat swing is likely? I don't know. Because unfortunately, in addition to having this fracture with MAGA, you don't have competent Democrat messaging right now. The liberals are even worse off. They're like another clown show. They may have to hit rock bottom for another election cycle before they start to realize that First of all, they still don't acknowledge what happened. You know, very few are acknowledging why they lost the last time around, that a lot of their issues rely from trying to be too much to too many people, from a status point of view, right? So, you know, for those of us old enough, Hody, in the late 80s, early 90s, there were a lot of people who said one of the Republican Party's biggest mistakes was they tried to be more big tent. And that's when they started getting like evangelicals into the party. See, a lot of people think that evangelicals and that sort of bloc was always Republican. It wasn't. They really coalesced under the Reagan coalitions, right? But in doing so, they got short-term electoral success, and the Democrats were able to get around their some central political themes, right? Then they failed, because what happened? Democrats try to be everything to everybody, and when you start becoming coalitions of one-issue coalitions, rather, you start to fall apart. We're seeing that with this current Trump coalition, right? You got the anti-immigrant bigots going, right? Vivek gets to ride in there until he says, hey, wait a second. You know, like, these H-1B guys from India really aren't the same thing as these dirty Mexicans coming over the border, this invading army. You know, Indians really aren't an invading army. Boo, get rid of them, get rid of them. And guess what? Vivek disappeared over a weekend, right? Then you've got Musk saying, like, yeah, let's doge it, man. Let's shut down this, and this. But guess what? Maybe we don't want to, you know, create an ICE army because that costs money. Maybe we don't want to keep raising our debt. Boo, you hate Trump. Get off, right? So when you're a party of single-issue coalitions, you're destined to fail. You cannot maintain that in the long term. It might bring you short-term success. So the Republicans right now have their success. Oh, and the Bobby Kennedy, the MAHA stuff, that's starting to crumble too, right? So you see a lot of that happening as well. So I don't know that this MAGA, MAHA, whatever they decide to call themselves in 2026 and 2028, especially 2028, I don't know how sustainable it is. Because once you have Big Daddy gone, the Teflon king of politics, Donald Trump, once he's gone, who do you coalesce around? J.D. Vance? I don't know. A lot of people find him creepy and nowhere near as charismatic as Trump. None of Trump's kids have daddy's charisma. So who do you bring in that's charismatic? I don't know. But it doesn't bode well for Republicans, which is great until you look at the other side of the coin, which is Democrats don't have their act together. You might think that libertarians might make some inroads in that environment, but we don't have our crap together either. You know, so, yeah, I don't know. I'd love to see the change just for turmoil, to be honest with you. That would be my favorite thing. Okay, and I think our guest is here. So let's see if we could bring her on. Let's see, everyone. Hi, Angela. How are you doing?
I'm good. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you and we can see you.
That is like the first thing that's gone right all night. I'm so sorry. I apologize. It's very rude of me. I can assure you that I came up here and tested all my equipment before, and I came in and I was like, okay, got my I was using my webcam to get my makeup on and all that, and then it was like, oh, no, time for the show. I'm not going to work anymore. So
that's okay. Thank you for joining us. And for those, if you've seen me and Hody kind of look off to the side, we've been trying to talk and trying to chat with Angela to try to get her on camera. So we're glad it all worked out. And we're glad to have Angela on because we wanted to not go from the Epstein talk, which was honestly filler, until we had a chance to bring Angela on, because we want to talk about some important things in terms of LP politics. And the premise for tonight's show was that I was on Twitter being my typical blowhard self, and I asked a simple question. You know, I said, hey, just out of curiosity, I'm not up to speed. Someone tell me what's been going on with Michigan. I've heard these things, the Michigan aid, the lawsuits, the this, the that, and I really wasn't aware of what was going on. And Angela was kind enough. You know, she's been watching the show for a couple of weeks now, and she said, she gave me this beautiful Twitter reply thread, kind of brought me up to speed, and I had the same idea Hody had almost at the same time, which was, we got to get Angela on to talk about this. And Angela, another fortuitous thing is, again, sometimes I fall ass backwards into good luck, which is, this weekend is the Michigan Libertarian Party's convention this weekend. So a lot of this comes into play, it's timely. And I wanted to get you on to kind of bring up our viewers who may not be as familiar with what happened there, just a chance for you to say what you have to say. So welcome to the show, and go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself before we start talking about LP Michigan.
Well, yeah, thanks for having me. It's, I've seen a lot of very important faces here in this spot. So I'm kind of fangirl a little bit. Ooh, oh, the show. I made the big leagues. So me personally, my libertarian cards dated 1993. I have a similar story to a lot of libertarians. I left the party with the Ron Paul movement and tried the, oh, we're going to, you know, we'll make the Republican Party more libertarian, and that's our best way to succeed.
Right.
That didn't really work. So I came back to the party when the Tea Party started crashing really hard, I think. Laura Ebke was one of my friends. She came back to the party. Justin Amash came, you know, he quit and came. There were, you know, there's other names I could mention, but basically all these Liberty Republicans, with the exception of Thomas Massey, were, mm-hmm. you know, leaving the party and coming over and going back to the Libertarian Party, and I'm like, I'm in. So, you know, that's how we came back. We moved to Michigan at the time. We were living in Illinois before that. And we got here, and the affiliate, our county affiliate, was not really active. There were a couple of members who lived outside of the county, but they were, you know, they were keeping the affiliate alive, but just technically. There were no events and no, you know, nothing going on, no recruitment drives. That it was just it was technically there. So we joined it, you know, how libertarians are. You know, Adam Kokesh told me one time, oh, yeah, you can join the party, and if, you know, after you're there 2 weeks, you can be on the board. And
he oh, yeah.
Yeah. He wasn't wrong.
Yeah.
We joined the party, and they were like, hey, we're glad to have you. There's really not an affiliate there, but would you guys want to run one? And we said, yeah, sure, let's do that. So we took over our county affiliate, and then, you know, there was a spot on the board. My husband joined the board, and honestly, he did a lot more in the beginning than I ever did. I was not all that active. You know, both of us were active with, you know, the events and the, you know, the things that go along with running an affiliate. You know,
right.
we were very much in that. But as far as the party politics go, I couldn't even tell you the names of half the people that were on our Michigan board, much less national. I had no clue.
Right.
So we were fine. You know, we had a little affiliate. We were growing it. Again, when we started it, there was like two of us, and then right there at the end, there were like 12, which isn't really bad though. We didn't even have it for 2 years, and you know, we were still growing. I mean, we had
right.
plans. I'll tell you, we saw, this is a timely statement, we saw Evan McMahon give he does a really excellent affiliate building seminar, program, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
And I can't recommend it enough. He has just got all the tools and methods and techniques that anybody could want. So, you know, we were doing okay, and then it all fell apart. So much of what we have, I have to be really careful because it devolves really quickly into, you know, bylaws. You know, well, this requires a 2/3, and he only did it half. And, you know, really, everybody's eyes
right.
start to glaze over, and nobody wants to hear that. So I know that you guys can cut me off if I do that, so feel free.
Yeah. That's okay.
So what happened was we had an election. Well, go back a little bit. Andrew Chatterin came in with the Mises Caucus, as did I.
I was going to ask you, right, like, just to give context, you were an original Mises person. You came in on that sort of original Mises wave of support, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, I came from the Ron Paul wing of the Republican Party, and they were billing themselves as, you know, the Ron Paul replacement revolution, not exactly in those words, but, you know, strong ties to that. And I was, you know, and they were really aggressive about reaching out to people. And we were like, My husband did not sign up. Not that he wouldn't have, but because he was immediately made affiliate chair, he thought it was improper that a chair should belong to any caucus. So he wanted to be as neutral as possible. I had no such concerns. I was like, oh, no, these, you know, no. I mean, it's, it, yeah, I just, you know. So, I mean, I was in the caucus. I wasn't really all that important, but my skill set is accounting. So as is normal, anytime I join an organization, I usually end up being a treasurer. Just comes to me. So, and there's, and I have I've done FEC reporting for, you know, 20 years now. So that's usually the role that I play in the parties. It's not sexy, but it, you know, but
somebody has to do it, right?
Yeah. Ask the Libertarian Party right now if they could use a good accountant.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. When Todd Hagopian said it's not my job to watch the money, it's just my job to make the reports, I about fell out of my chair. I'm like, what? It's really not what the law says at all, but okay. So anyway, so I got in, and again, Andrew is a really good organizer, at least he was at that time. And I look back now, and I see things much differently than I did at the time.
Right, and I'm sorry, let me pause you for a quick second. We're talking now about Andrew Chatterton,
yes,
who is the current chair of the Michigan Libertarian Affiliate, and he's also a Region 1 rep on the LNC board.
Yes.
So I want to set the stage correctly for those who are not as steeped in LP politics. So, okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Continue, Angela.
No, it's fine. When he came, and anybody who's been with Mises can tell you that this is all by design, but at the time, we didn't realize it. We had our own little separate Discord. You know, we had Mises-only events and Mises-only chats, and yet, you know, in the public discourse, when they're trashing the old school libertarians, you know, they were accusing everybody else of, oh, you guys are just, you're just a social club. You don't want to, you know, you don't want to win elections. And I look back now and it seems so, you know, just contradictory. And honestly, even at that time, you know, I had a lot of friends in libertarian land that were Mises caucus people. So I didn't really harbor all that resentment. I just sort of let that kind of stuff go in one ear and out the other. And we had a lot of libertarians here who were on the far left. You know, that like everybody who joins the party is a Nazi type of,
okay,
you know, type of, that's the greeting we got. You know, you guys are Nazis and fascists. And yeah, okay. Yeah. So, I mean, it's no wonder that we have trouble keeping people when that's, you know, when you get accused of being, you know, you're a leftist or you're a Nazi, but it's, you know, the branding you get especially when you come on board from another party, you know, you're not usually 100% libertarian yet.
Right.
You know, and people kind of have to tolerate a little bit of that until the philosophy, you know, starts to wear down. And if you make people defensive, it'll never wear down. They, you know, they'll fight back forever. But if you just, you're like, oh, that's cool, let's do this other thing, after a while, it kind of starts to sink in. So we came in that. At the time, Andrew Chatterton was, I don't think he was on the board, but he was maybe convention chair. And he put together our first convention in Michigan was a banger. I mean, it had all the right speakers at all the right time. It had, you know, Spike Cohen, Larry Sharp out of New York, and a lawyer here who is pretty famous in this area. And he's very personable and he's funny. And I mean, they made money hand over fist and everybody had a great time. And then the next convention, we elected officers, and Andrew was elected like second vice chair, which seemed like a good fit, and it really wasn't. With him on the board, because he comes off, and I said this on Twitter, he comes off, when you first get to know him, he comes off as this big teddy bear kind of guy, really a little on the soft-spoken side, and not, he's a big guy, but he's not threatening.
A lot of people have described him exactly with that, like he comes off like a big teddy bear. I've got to tell you, Angela, it just didn't decide. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but a lot of people have just, and I've never met Andrew Chatterton. I'll say that up front. I have no opinion on the man one way or another because, like I say, I tend to judge people by the way they treat me, unless I have reason to otherwise. So, yeah, but it's funny that a lot of people have used that exact phrase. He's a big teddy bear. He's, I guess because of his physical stature as well, he just comes off like a big teddy bear. So you've heard that too, right, Hody, that Andrew is just like a big teddy bear type of guy?
Yeah, as far as the description goes, soft spoken, obviously not kind of in the language that he uses, but his tone, right? It's kind of big John vibes, honestly.
Oh,
at
my
first,
God.
that only lasts for as long as you can't disagree with him.
Mm.
That's what it all comes down to. You can't say, well, okay, that's fine, Andrew. We'll just have to agree to disagree on that and then move on to the next topic. He can't sleep at night knowing that someone thinks he's mistaken about something. I mean, it's – I'm not exaggerating. It's really the darndest thing I've ever seen. But he his communication style, he's very aggressive. He calls, friars and laws – liars and frauds and cheats and just, everybody else is the problem. Nothing is his. He got to the board meetings that he was attending became emblematic of that. He would put forth a motion and it would mostly fall apart during the discussion phase. there would end up being people who were, yelling and screaming, and it was just not
right.
It was chaotic.
Right.
It was awful. The chair first, the chair and the first vice chair got upset when a motion didn't pass. They wanted, it was when the LNC had repealed the bigotry plank of the platform.
That was in Reno in 2022.
2020, I think.
2020?
Or maybe it was 2022.
I think it was. Wasn't 22 the Reno takeover, Hody?
We had the Reno takeover, but that was before the Chase one. So this would have been 2020, I believe.
2020? Okay. Okay. Yeah. Well, it was at the Reno. It was
right after the Reno reset. I'm pretty sure.
Right.
Or leading up to it. I'm not sure. Again, I get fuzzy on my dates.
Right. Because I remember that once they took over, that was the first thing they did. Right. They tried to remove the plank on anti bigotry, and I think Spike had to negotiate some sort of language that was acceptable to everybody. But yes. So we're. I think that was in. Okay, so 20 or 2022, but it was result of the Reno Turk takeover.
Everybody knows that happened. They may not know exactly when, but everybody knows that moment. So here in Michigan, they wanted to write a similar language into our plank, and it failed. And our chair and vice chair rage quit, which is never a good thing. If you're a libertarian and you're thinking about quitting, please don't. If you're going to resign, that's fine, but don't do it in a fit of anger and, give 2 weeks notice or something, because rage quitting really does a lot of damage. And this is what happened. They rage quit. Andrew ascended to the chair. However, I will say that at that time, nobody, including Andrew, was certain that he actually ascended. I look now and it's really simple. I was pretty sure that he did, but they were like, no, it's only the first vice chair and yada, yada, yada. And again, infighting all the time. So
when you say that, I'm sorry, just for my own understanding here, when you say ascended to become chair, Was there a vote, or do you mean through some procedural bylaw, sort of like if the president gets shot, the vice president takes over type of thing?
Just Robert's rules.
Robert's rules. Okay.
Yeah, if the chair is vacant, then the vice chair automatically moves up. What they weren't sure of was if both chairs are vacant, does the second vice chair move up? The short answer to that is yes, he does. But
okay.
But there was much fighting about that, and because really he was not popular with the majority of the libertarians there. I mean, Andrew brought in the new people, the big wave of people, but by and large, they weren't doing anything. You know, they came in, they came in and voted, they went to Reno, and then most of them we never heard from again.
Well, that was part of Heiss's Libertarian for a Day thing. That was a general Mises tactic, right? Like, get people to just show up, become libertarians just long enough to vote, and then you never saw them again. It was something similar to what Howard Stern did here in New York in the 80s when he ran for governor as a libertarian. He just got all his fans. He said it cost $20 to register, drive up to upstate New York, register with the Libertarian Party at the convention, and make me the nominee, which is what happened. Like, something like 5,000 fans showed up or whatever.
$20 to see Howard Stern? It seems like a deal if you're a fan.
There you go. So, but that was part of the – and again, I give – as much as I may disagree with a lot of the Mises actions, I think, you know, you got to give them props. If they did do that as a strategy, it was very effective, and they took advantage of existing bylaws or whatnot, and they pushed across their candidates, right? So in that sense, so you're saying something similar like that happened where there were these folks came in, they were registered, they voted, and then see ya, never heard from them again.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that happened a lot nationwide, actually.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
There were, you know, it was, like you said, that was part of the plan. I remember talking with one of my libertarian friends who resigned after Reno, and I'm like, I can't believe you're resigning. You know, these people come from the same wing of the party. That they've got the party now. She's like, yeah, I have no idea what they're going to do with it. I don't want anything to do with it. At the time,
wow.
I thought, I don't get that. But looking back, apparently she was much more observant or something than I am, because, you know, she saw this coming. I did not. So we had Andrew had named himself chair. The membership did not want him to be chair. I mean, it really is that simple.
Right.
So we had our next convention. Michigan is weird. We have a lot of conventions. We have, we have one convention that's every 2 years, and then, that's in the odd number of years. So that's this year we have one convention. In even number of years, we have two. And that's a residual effect of having Gary Johnson be on, you know, get us into a major party status. That affected the way that we had to select our delegates. And it also affected when we had to have our nominating convention and all that.
Right.
So what used to be one convention a year became two conventions every other year, because of the presidential election stuff. So we could go back, but then you have to change all the bylaws and all that. So it's just the way it is right now. So we had, you know, another convention coming up. And at that convention, this is where it all starts. At that convention, Andrew decided that he was no longer we wanted him out, or I shouldn't say we wanted him out. I was still on his side at this time.
Okay.
And I, but you know, my husband being a district rep and, you know, we're here and stuff. And he's like, well, you know, I think that they're going to do a recall petition against him. And of course I went to Andrew and I'm like, oh, Andrew, they're going to do a recall petition. And he was like, I don't think they have the numbers. There's nothing to worry about. And so my husband said, well, what if we go ahead and put it out there and that will cement your position as chair? It will prove that you can withstand a vote and then that will settle this.
A vote of confidence, basically.
Yeah, basically. Yep. He agreed to this. Now, at the time, there was, again, everything was in an uproar. We had lawyers involved, and we had parliamentarians involved, right. And we, you know. And all of these people told us that this motion was in order at this convention. Andrew, I have emails from him that said, this is in order. He helped us write it. He helped draft the language on it. All of it. Day of convention comes, he lost. Hmm. He lost bigly. He was removed from office. We elected another vice chair, and he went to chair. There were admittedly some problems with the way that we did that, but realistically, the solution should have been to have another convention and do the election properly.
Hmm.
That's all we ever wanted. But Andrew waited, I don't know, 4 months, 6 months, some ridiculous amount of time. And then he filed an appeal with the Judicial Committee, which, I mean, I know you guys all have some experience with this because National has one. And I just thought that it was not our best move, or not a good move, because it was going to tear the party apart.
Mm.
And and I begged him. I mean, we used to have these conversations, and I mean, we would be on the phone for hours till 2, 3, 4 in the morning, you know. And he would yell and scream, and you know, and I would argue because I'm kind of stubborn sometimes. Right. But the whole point of it was, don't do this. You're going to rip the party apart. Just, you know, run again next time, or, you know, something. But he wanted that chair. And he told me during one of those phone conversations that it didn't matter what kind of parliamentarian opinions we got, that the Judicial Committee was three Mises people on purpose, no matter what we came up with or what they came up with. At this time, it was they. No matter what they came up with, that the verdict was going to be in his favor. And that was when I was like, I quit. You know, I am not, you can't do this. And so, of course, my husband, because I'm telling him all this, and he's just like going crazy over all of it.
Right.
And So
I'm sorry, at this time when you've had these discussions with Andrew and you can't talk him out of this, which, Hody, it seems kind of weird to me. It's sort of like asking for a replay challenge after you ran the next play in football, right? Like, he waited 6-7 months according to Angela, and then he said, hey, I kind of disagree with this, let me file an appeal, right?
Yeah, and I mean, if we're using sports analogies, it's kind of like you're getting blown out 77-10 with 2 minutes to go, and then you're just like, oh, I don't think that play clock is right. It's like,
right.
Can we just get this thing over? I mean, you're done. You're cooked, right? It's over.
And at the time, were you still the treasurer of the party? Or
Not the party, the Michigan Mises PAC.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Michigan had a treasurer, a longtime treasurer, who was like a really nice guy, and everybody liked Norm. He got along with everybody.
But you weren't on the board of the state affiliate, correct?
Not on the state affiliate. My husband was on the board. I was on the board of the Mises PAC.
Okay.
Not Michael Heise's, the Michigan Mises PAC.
Right.
Yeah, the state version of it. I was on the board of that.
So when you were trying to talk Andrew out of taking this action, you were like, you weren't on the board, so it wasn't affecting anything directly. You were just you were trying to talk him out of it for the good of
the party,
the Libertarian Party in Michigan. And at that time, I'm assuming he would have considered you an ally politically because you were both Mises Caucus people at that point.
I don't know if he was still considering me an ally at that point because I was arguing with him. It's like, gotcha. Once you argue with him, it's,
gotcha.
You know, unless you turn around and say, oh, gee, you were right, I was wrong.
Hmm.
you're forever off his list. So gotcha.
Okay.
But I was technically still on the board. I was technically still the Mises Pact treasurer. And then when he told me that it was all rigged, it was, you know, we found out later that Karen Ann Harlow's have her hand in it, and they had a new parliamentarian. Everybody knows JJ these days, I think. And I think it just took them that long to come up with a plan that would allow them to overturn the results of the convention.
Mm.
And that's what they did. The judicial committee announced the decision, everything was done. Everything was all done. I mean, like the transfer of power, like the city access that the elected board had was cut off, and everything was transferred over to Andrew. And again, I wasn't on the board at this time.
Right.
So there was some talk of a lawsuit, and the libertarians said, no, we're libertarians. We don't need to go to court. We don't need to, the courts settle this. We just, you know, we can work it out. And so while they were talking about that, our treasurer, the party treasurer, he's since passed away, but he had been terminally ill for a while, and then he got, you know, his health took a turn. He couldn't do the books anymore. So the president of the elected board asked me if I would be acting treasurer. I wasn't on the board. I didn't get a vote, but I was just going to do the books.
Now, this is the group that won at convention but wasn't being officially recognized. Is that correct?
They had been recognized by national until the judicial opinion came out, and then
right.
Yeah, so I said yes, and so there was, of course, and there's money involved. You know, people get awfully mean about the money, and Andrew went to the bank and basically presented some documents that said he was the official chair, and named a treasurer who doesn't even exist. I mean, and the bank gave him all the party money, and our people were like, no. So they went to the bank, and you know how it is. It's a big bank. It's Comerica. But everybody's got their different branch. So
sure, yeah.
Andrew's going to this branch, and they're giving him the money. And then, you know, the Mike Saliba is going to this other branch, and they're like, well, no, that shouldn't have happened. And what happened was Comerica said, you know what? We're out of this. We don't want anything to do with any of you. So they closed the accounts down. And and told us we have to go to court to figure it out. So that money is actually still tied up in court right now. And that is, I sent a little link to Hody and asked him to about a Facebook
yes.
link I had, because yeah. we just found out that Andrew at Chatterton is, again, our convention is Saturday. This money has been sitting in lockup for months.
Right. So it's basically been in escrow,
yeah.
probably held up by the state until a determination could be made as who is the rightful owner of these funds, correct?
Yeah. And that was kind of our plan there was
right.
we'll just wait until the next election. And then if we lose, oh, well.
Right.
Know.
Right.
But if we win, we didn't give Andrew all our money for the last 2 years.
Right. So we kind of, Hody and I kind of reviewed that link that your husband put up on Facebook. And correct me if I have the gist of it wrong, which was a couple of days before the convention, which is this weekend, right? Andrew Chatterton's attorney basically said, had some sort of court order. Is that correct? That
said, he contacted our attorney. We have
right and said you got to reimburse us for attorney's fees, which happened to come out to exactly the same amount that's in escrow being held up. Correct?
Yeah, we don't know what we saw is that because we haven't seen the agreement yet. But it is what we saw is that the attorney believes is Andrew Chatterton's opinion that the attorney is entitled to, like, it's $38,000 in there. Maybe that's true. I don't know, but I can't imagine how they racked up that much money. I mean, there is speculation that Andrew just went there and said, I'm not going to win this election, and I don't want them to have this money. So we need to come up with a way for, you know, you can keep it all. I just don't want them to have it.
Well, so, again, assuming that the facts are as your husband stated them in that post, so I'll sort of cover myself by saying that. What does seem a little hinky is that the amount that's claimed as a legal fee reimbursement is exactly the amount that was held up in these frozen accounts, say. So that always seems a little suspicious, you know, when it's, you know, it's exactly that amount, you know.
Yeah. I'm not, you know, I'm really not that much involved with the legal world. It could be that it was some sort of a contingency arrangement. Mm. What I find hard to believe is that they actually racked up that much in legal bills. Because, and look, we'll circle back to this. So I'm acting treasurer. The bank account is locked up. We have competing boards is what we have now. They tried to say we started a new party. At no point did we start a new party. The elected board was just convinced that they were the elected board and therefore they were the rightful party. Andrew was convinced that because his three friends said he was the rightful chair, that he was the rightful party. So because I was because we had an affiliate, there is so much. We ended up having like these competing conventions because our bylaws gave us, like, if 10% of the members sign a petition, you can call a special convention.
Right.
And so that's what they did. They put together a petition and called a special convention. It's supposed to take place within 45 days. Andrew refused to call the convention. So they're like, okay, we're just going to call our own convention. And we'll have it on April 1st, which is the first date that our bylaws allow you to have your annual convention.
Right.
So we'll just have this convention on April 1st. We'll have new elections and we can move on.
Right.
Andrew said, no, I'm going to have that special convention that I refused to call earlier. I'm going to have that on April 1st instead.
Okay.
So well, it's, again, I was still a little bit on the fringes of all this, but I kept wading in deeper and deeper. They spoke with an attorney who advised them not to go to Andrew's convention because it would, the special convention that he called, because it would just mean that we acknowledge that he was indeed the leader. So if the judicial committee, it's when the judicial committee found some reason to overturn that one, we would kind of be stuck. I mean, we couldn't be sore losers every single time. So we had a convention, a state convention, on the same day that Andrew had the special convention that we called. We had 75, 85 people at ours. He had like 30. And some of those were literal children. Mm. Because our bylaws don't have an age limit. And I mean, clearly we had the support of everything. At that convention, I was appointed treasurer. At that point, I was officially on the board. right after that, we got hit with a lawsuit from National claiming that we were violating their intellectual property rights by claiming to be the Libertarian Party of Michigan.
So, again, just to, again, put this all in context and timeline-wise, because I know a lot of this can get confusing. I know I'm confused, so I just want to say it out loud. So you had competing conventions. The convention, say the Challengers Convention that you guys held, that was not the Chatterton Group, had a convention, elected its own board, right? The Chatterton Special Convention, I'm assuming, occurred, and they reaffirmed their own board seats, right? Then you're saying shortly thereafter, the LNC, the National Libertarian Committee, which at the time was Angela McArdle, correct, has a legal action against you guys, basically saying C&D letters everywhere, cease and desist using our trademark. You cannot call yourselves the Libertarian Party. You are not a recognized state affiliate, correct? So now you're getting hit with this cease and desist, which is not a legal action. It's just like a precursor to a legal action, correct?
Correct. And some of us got multiple cease and desists. Some of us didn't get any, which, like my husband didn't get a letter, but he was named in the suit, but he never got a letter. Hmm. So yeah, it was kind of sketchy.
And I guess no one pointed out that supposed ANCAPs supposedly don't believe in intellectual property.
Oh yeah, there were various times over the course of the two or so years that the Libertarian Party would tweet out something about, you know, intellectual property not being libertarian, and I'm pretty sure they were just trolling us because I was
saying that especially for my ANCAP friend here, Mr. Hody, because like we'll have discussions on that. So yeah, I personally think there is intellectual property, but. Again, I'm not an anarchist, so. But anyway, that aside.
I just want to say, I'm really happy. You have finally found something that I disagree with Hody on. I didn't know that, because I also believe in intellectual property, which makes it all funnier. It's like, I'm the one who believes in it, but I'm getting sued for it by these people who don't believe in it. So
this was clearly a move by National to make sure that their preferred board stayed in place in Michigan. Let me see if I can paraphrase here. Our belief is that this was a move that was meant to intimidate you guys and to prevent you legally from calling yourselves the Libertarian Party of Michigan. And for those that might be saying, well, let Michigan work it out, this has ramifications because it would affect the delegation that got sent to the National Convention in D.C. earlier this year, correct?
Well, that was a different lawsuit.
Before we get to all the lawsuits, at the time, the reason that if you were an Angela McArdle-led LNC, which is Mises through and through, one of the vested interests they would have to prevent your competing convention, your competing slate of board members, would be that your delegation would be the one that gets sent to the National Convention, correct? As opposed to the board of...
Yeah, I honestly just don't... I mean, Andrew Chatterton wanted to run the board. I mean, that's just all there is to it.
Okay.
We were perfectly happy. If he could win an election, people would have quit. I mean, I wouldn't have. If he could win a fair election, people would have been mad and they would quit. That's what libertarians do. But, you know, there's other people. I mean, I've lost elections before, you know, and it's like, you know, I make a motion and it fails, you know. Oh, well. You know, I sit back down and just start, you know, thinking about the next one. It's just like, you know, these things happen. It's just,
it really sounds like what you were, correct me if I'm wrong, it really sounds like what you were more interested in is, let's keep everything above board here. And I kind of sense this inflection point, Hody, I don't know if you noticed it in Angela's demeanor when she was talking, was when you were basically told, like, look, the fix is in. It doesn't matter what opinions you get, what parliamentarian nonsense you bring. The JC is in the bag for us. They're going to rule against us. And it sounds to me like that was the point where you said, I'm out. This is not what we signed up for.
That's not what anybody signs up for.
Yeah. Was there a legal resolution, or is all this still, are there still two libertarian parties in Michigan fighting right now?
No, we got sued for the trademark infringement stuff. And then I will tell you that, to me, shows me how much spirit is still out there, though, because we raised so much money for our defense. Mm. I mean, immediately. And I don't know these people. They don't know me. Again, I was active on the national level, and people were like, we have to stop this. And they had seen some of this happen before, like in New Hampshire, in Massachusetts, in New Mexico, there was, you know, all this uproar. And I knew about New Hampshire, Massachusetts, I'm a little fuzzier on, you know, New Mexico is a thing, you know, but when we hit Michigan, it was like, that's just enough. Because we have some very important people here in Michigan. We have, like, Bill Hall was a lawyer for them, for the LNC. We have Jim Huedler, who's one of the founders of the party. There's several other people who have at times been on the LNC and are well regarded in, you know, in held in some esteem.
Right.
So, and the best thing about all this is that I have actually got to meet those people and become friends with them. And I mean, nobody wants to get sued, but no, and fight. I'm so tired of the fighting. I just want to go ahead and be positive about what we can accomplish together. But when we got that lawsuit, they immediately, people started asking us, do you need help? Do you need help? So we got we couldn't set up a bank account because Andrew was listed as the party. So, but I had a bank account that said the Libertarian Party of Genesee County, and because I was also the treasurer of that organization. So we just started collecting money in there, which we could do. I mean, there's nothing illegal about it. And, but Andrew did not care for that one bit. So they, it's all this little petty nonsense. He disaffiliated our affiliate that meant we had to close the bank account, yada, yada. And we just started having the money sent directly to the lawyer. He couldn't shut him down. What was I going to say? He disaffiliated us because we were, honestly, our affiliate, we were very fair about it. On the April 1st convention, we told everybody, look, there are two conventions. If you're Andrew's team, then you should probably go to that one. We're going to go to the Lansing one. But at the end of the day, we'll all come back here and we'll work on our affiliate stuff together and just let all this other stuff play out.
Right.
Unfortunately, nobody from our affiliate wanted to go to Andrew's thing. And so that also offended him, I think. That was probably another factor in why he wanted to disaffiliate us. Because we have 15 delegates. That's in our state, that's a pretty good number. It's not the highest number, but it's probably one of the top five. It's a big number.
So it could potentially swing things. So I want to sort of bring it to this weekend, because I want to make sure you get your message out for folks this weekend, right? So this weekend is what I assume to be the one convention, right? So we're not having two conventions anymore.
Not this year. Next year. Have two again.
Okay. So at this convention, it is the regularly slated election for the board, right? This is where the whole board is up for election. Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay. So this Saturday, I'm assuming Andrew Chatterton and the rest of the current board is trying to retain their seats.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay. Well, tell us what's going on in terms of the election this weekend and what you would like the folks watching Free for All to do. Like, help us understand what's going on this weekend and what we should try to get done this weekend for the folks in Michigan.
Well, the LP Alliance, which I think you're familiar with, I believe Philip was on here, is going to be live streaming it. So I would certainly encourage everybody to tune in and watch, because almost certainly there'll be some fireworks. I really hope that we can get past this. We can elect a chair that is going to chair a party that can get along. We had assumed that Andrew was going to run again, but we got a packet from the pre-convention packet, and he has a letter from the chair in there, and he's thanking people for the support and, he said, they've accomplished a lot, and I don't know what. They raised $0. If you don't count the RFK money, they raised $0 in the federal election fund, and then just slightly more than that in the state fund. But, I mean, it's abysmal. Membership is down. Of course, it's down across the country, so that's not a surprise. But I'm not sure what accomplishments he's really proud of, but he's proud of them. He told us he was. But he signed it at the bottom and said that, like, his outgoing chair, 22-25. So he may not be running. See, that's what's really weird, too. It's like, if you're going to run for chair, wouldn't you announce it? I mean, I would be, if I was running for chair, I would call everybody and tell them, hey, I'm running for chair. I'd send them an email. I'd send them a postcard. I'd make sure they knew my name when they got there. If they wanted to call and tell me what they wanted to see, I'd listen to them, And the Mises Caucus is really closed like that. If you're not in that inner circle, you don't know what's going on.
Mm.
So what I really want to see happen, though, to answer your question, is I want people to come to the convention. I want everybody to have a good time. Because even, honestly, at our worst, when you go to these conventions, going to a libertarian convention is so good for the soul. You get around all these people who you are somewhat ideologically aligned with. We don't all agree on everything, like IP or, there's some people from the right that are, still a little shy on the immigration issue. You get the pro-choice versus the pro-life people. There's always somebody there who's got a caveat with the party. But when you're there in person, it doesn't matter, because you're, like, all there and you're all eating and everybody's talking and it's, you get to see these people and it's great. It's like, it's just like going to church, sort of, where you get that spiritual connection. So that's really what I want to happen. I want to get the members there to elect a board, revisit our bylaws, revisit our platform, come to some agreements, and move forward. It's, we've been doing this for 2 years. It's time to stop.
Are you going to run for a board seat?
I don't think so. If there is nobody else that wants to run in my district, I will take the board seat, but I'm tired of fighting, and electoral politics are what they are. So I won't let the seat be vacant, but I was nominated for treasurer and I turned it down because, for one thing, I think we need a deeper bench. If I'm the only one that knows how to do it, then if I get hit by that proverbial bus,
sure,
we're sunk. So there's another guy who, he really wants to do it. He took all the FEC classes and the state classes and got himself up to speed, and I support him 100%. I want him to do it because, again, now we have two people who know what's going on, instead of none.
So let us know who that person is. Let people know who to vote for.
Andrew Duke. It's his name. He's another Andrew. So okay.
You have a thing for Andrews, I guess.
Yeah, he and I often laugh because he hates it when people talk about Andrew in that tone, and I was like, yeah, bro, I feel your pain, because I get a lot of the Angels crap.
Oh, there you go. That's true. Do you have somebody that you're pulling for to be the new chair?
We do. Justin Miramonte, who came on board, like, he came to the party, he's kind of new as far as these things go. He came in right after the split happened, and he's been on the board for almost 2 years. He's worked with Andrew, and he's worked with us, and he is really committed to bridging this divide and getting everybody on the same page and moving forward again. So he's a very methodical thinker. He doesn't rush to make decisions. Very deliberate. And I think that can be a very positive force, in especially in this moment.
Okay.
So, yep.
That sounds good. Listen, everyone, I want to make sure that if you're in Michigan, especially, if you're a libertarian in Michigan, see if you could get out to the convention. I'm sure if you hit up Angela on X, she answered me. So that means she'll probably answer to anybody who reaches out to her.
I'll talk to anybody.
On X.
Yeah, I'll
talk to anybody.
Yeah.
If people are willing to talk to me, I figure they could talk to anybody. So why don't you do that? So please hit her up. And Angela, hang out for 10 minutes. Let's get your thoughts on the next topic as well. And thank you for covering the Michigan situation. Hody, why don't you kick us off? I don't want to skip this because it's trending in libertarian news this week, and I don't want to totally ignore it. Why don't you give us the 411 on what's going on with the LNC board resignations this week?
Yeah, so there's a bit of a Michigan connection here, and so I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on it. Obviously, Adrian, in kind of a significant upset, lost to Evan McMahon for secretary and promptly resigned as a result of that.
That's Adrian Malagon, right?
Adrian Malagon, yeah. Right. And then we had Kathy, and now it's the part where I regret not learning last names.
Yaniskavich.
Yeah. Thank you for being able to pass it.
When you have a last name like Georgopoulos, you learn to pronounce Yaniskavich. So there you go.
So she resigned as well. And so I saw, like, for me, you know, knowing Adrian's behavior, knowing the abuse, knowing the baggage that comes with Adrian, I was like, okay, this is a good thing. But then somebody's like, Chatterton's about to remake the entire board in his image. And obviously that's not good. So maybe you could shed some light on exactly what these resignations mean in general and what they mean to you.
Yeah, I might have been the one that said that. Adrian, for all his faults, was the only one I think that he kept Chatterton reined in. I mean, he didn't do it properly, but if you watch that last meeting where, like, Andrew kept speaking and Austin kept speaking out of turn, and Nikayla wasn't stepping on that. And apparently Adrian found that quite irritating, and he kept muting them and then eventually kicked them out of the meetings. And that is totally improper, according to Roner. You're not allowed to do any of that. The funny part was, Andrew does that all the time in his meetings. So to see him being all belligerent about it when it happened to him was maddening and hilarious at the same time. But with Adrian gone, I do think that Chatterton will bully his way into, I mean, I'm sure he's aiming for chair at this point. I'm sure he will bully his way into getting the vacancies filled with Mises people, and they will all report to him. I mean, he is running the show as far as that goes right now, I think. And he does it with an iron fist. It's, there'll be a lot of people that quit because his style is just to bulldoze people, and not everybody wants to be bulldozed. You know, it's either you hang out with him and you support him 100%, or he will run you over and never say a good word about you again. So we'll see. You know, there's some other people on the party. Paul Dar is doing an amazing job, I think, trying to keep the party from dying and keep it together just long enough for it to get to Grand Rapids, at least. So I don't know what kind of tricks he has up his sleeve, but hopefully they'll be able to get somebody who's rational and rounded on the board and not just straight up Angela supporters. I don't know. I'm not ready to let these people go yet. You know, I was like, these people did this to the party. And I'm not even talking about Michigan. You know, it's just that the membership is dropping. Revenue is off the cliff. They ran up all these bills. They were unsuccessful at best. And their refusal to admit that and to address that, I find disturbing. If we can get the party back on the right track, then perhaps I'll be ready to, you know, forgive and forget and let's move forward with some of these people. But right now, I think that putting them in any kind of positions of power is ridiculous. I mean, they don't have anything to prove that they're a good fit for those positions. And I don't think that will stop anybody, but that's how I see it.
There's a lot of folks who admit they were part of that initial Mises wave that came in. They were true believers. And personalities aside, I mean, Karen Ann, yourself, Michaela to some extent, there was the state chair in Georgia who said, I'm no longer Mises and quit. I forget the gentleman's name right now. But there's a lot of these people who are high-profile Mises people, rah-rah, who all of a sudden say, this is not what we signed up for. I don't know how we didn't see it at the time, but we see it now. And to whatever extent they're capable of, they say, we're out, we're done, we were wrong. How strong do you think the Mises Caucus still is in terms of its influence within the party? Are we seeing like an extinction burst, as behavioralists would say? Are we seeing like the last thrashing of a dying beast, or do you think they still have some consolidation of power within the party?
I think that the problem we have, though, is that they still have some consolidation of power on the board. Mm. If the board members are being filled by an election of delegates at convention, I don't think that we would have anything to worry about, really. But the fact is, the board is pretty much split right now. You've got a couple people who are never Mises, some people who are former Mises, and some people who are hard Mises. And I do think that Andrew and Angela probably do still have some sway with some of the former Mises people, especially if they stuck around after Michael didn't get the chair position. I think that they are not, if they didn't vote for him, then I think that they're not Mises anymore. Unless they're not getting along with Steven and they're going to go back. People are so weird. I can't ever predict what's going to happen as far as those things go. But I do think that, I think that the board is going to be in turmoil from now until Grand Rapids. I think that it's just going to, I think that things are going to shift several times between now and then. We just need to keep the party alive and get through that, and then make sure that Angela doesn't get reelected again, because there's, I can't even.
Well, I think, count me in that camp. I'm not bashful about saying that, but quick question for you. And I feel like I'm dominating Hody here. So Hodester, please jump in at any point. But, Would you intellectually be in support if it's proven or there's a confession of some sort that money was embezzled according to the legal definition by Angela McArdle? Do you think it would be ridiculous to have a motion that says, hey, convicted thieves cannot be board members in the future?
Yeah, I think you probably have to amend the bylaws to get that happen, but I would support that. Yeah, that's probably one of my biggest beefs with the board under Michaela, is that they didn't pursue any legal action against her. And I know I know they don't have the money to do a civil suit, but, and I don't even care if we get the money back. I mean, you know, if she's broke, she's broke. But I let her pay for an attorney. Let her face a judge. You know, let her get outside of her circle and try to explain how this happened. But they don't even want to file that report. And I can only assume it's because they're still kind of attached to her. They're, you know, she's still sort of one of them. And that makes me very uncomfortable.
Well, when we had Stephen on a couple weeks ago, and I think he's since messaged us to say, we're still working on it. There's no final disposition. I think that was the last thing we heard, right, Hody? That they're still trying to figure out.
Yeah, he said he's in talks with lawyers. And I doubted him last time, and they came forward with the SIC report. So, you know, that was cool. So hopefully we get a little good luck this time as well. But, Angela, I am kind of feeling the same way that you feel. I know maybe it's just a vibe, but it doesn't make sense to not have something filed, you know, criminally, at least just to have it on record, unless you've got some kind of attachment there, like you said.
I agree with both of you. I don't understand why this hasn't been done already. Talk about rage quitting. I'd be rage filing at this point. I mean, unless you honestly believe that she didn't do this, to me, at worst, from what I read in that report, the absolute worst you could accuse her of and be credible is gross incompetence. That's like the best you could say about that situation. The more likely situation is that it's embezzlement, in my opinion. So, there you go. Like I said, in my opinion, because I can't say accountant or lawyer, I could just point at myself and just say idiot. But let's just move on and say, all right, okay. So, because politics being what it is, we see it in the Oval Office too. It doesn't matter what should it, like, we should never have someone like that in power again. We shouldn't. But it is what it is. So that would be interesting. We have some comments here. I think it's someone you might know. The comment here is from Candy DSC. I'm assuming that's your husband. The problem Mises has is that they bring people in using populist libertarian rhetoric, such as evoking Ron Paul and Austrian economics, but it does not take long for folks to realize that there is no substance beyond that rhetoric. And, yeah, I would tend to agree with you that it's the playbook that MAGA uses. It's the rhetoric of populism, which I'll throw in another plug, Catch Liberty Lens with Mike Tremont and myself this week's episode. We talk about populism not being the equivalent of individualism, and libertarians should be individualists, not populists. But, yeah, so Mr. Candy there has an absolute point. It's like there's talk, 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 but we're not seeing the results. Like you said, membership down across the board, revenue disappeared, wasteful spending. What seems to be, and I think a lot of people aren't paying attention to this, is the institutional knowledge that the, quote, old guard had. How do you get ballot access? How do you file reports? How do you balance a checkbook? Because I swear it's like it's being – the Mises Caucus, I a lot of times pejoratively refer to them as teens, because it seems to me like they just – you know, they're having a house party while the parents are gone, you know. Like nobody knows how to file a report. A lot – even admittedly, they'll be – like a lot of it just seems incompetence, you know. And I would hope that adults would see it for what it is and say we don't need this anymore going forward. But we'll see what happens in Grand Rapids. Hody, anything else you want to add to that?
No, I mean, and full disclosure, as a donor, I just, you know, for the cause, I hope that everything works out for you guys there. I'm not involved with the Libertarian Party I'm involved at an activist level, but I've always felt that we should be good allies, you know, and when the Libertarian Party is healthy and the activists are healthy, that's when the liberty movement in general really kind of picks up. And so I wish the best for you guys in Michigan. I hope that everything, I'm making a note of the folks that you wanted to get elected, and my heart goes out to them. My even after they get elected, it's a cruel punishment, especially trying to keep this ship afloat. But I hope that they are up to the task, and I hope you guys do well there. I guess all I got to give is well wishes to you there. I'm very excited for the future of Liberty as we exit this kind of dark place. We did it. The Libertarian Party made this same mistake 30 years ago. There's almost nothing that's different. And they turn things around pretty quick, and so hopefully we can survive and do the same thing.
Well said, Hody. And Angela, please, before we sign off, tell everyone about the convention again, if you want to give time and place, and also for where people can follow your musings.
The convention, like I said, is going to be live-streamed on the LP Alliance channels, so I would encourage everybody to watch there.
Is that Saturday?
Starts Saturday at 9. It's actually a two-day convention. I don't have the agenda here in front of me, but, you know, the first part of it is, you know, the delegates, and then we've all been to conventions, right? You do the delegates, and then the approval of the agenda, and then the convention rules, and yada yada.
Right.
So it starts off kind of slow, but it'll pick up pretty quickly, I think. I do want to give a shout out to two more people. Donna Gundel Krieg is running for secretary. She's a very long time member. She's been elected to office in Michigan. She's given money. She's given time. She's been elected. She's walked the walk. She's 100% a decent choice. And the other was, Dana Carver is running for a position, and I forget which vice chair it is. I think it's second. I don't know. that's terrible. I forget who's running for what. But I think that she would be amazing. That it's the position builds the affiliates, and she's a longtime activist. She's done lots of work. She knows everybody, and she knows everything about everybody and where the skeletons are and where the life is. And Dana Carver would be an excellent choice for that position. And that's really the only contested election that I'm aware of. I know there are two people, and both of them are fantastic. We'll be lucky to have either of those two in there. But I just think Dana's been with the party longer. She's got a better knowledge. I'd really like to see them both, like, on a committee or something together, doing this together. But I do think that Dana is the better choice, and that's really hard for me to pick a favorite. But but there it is. I am on Twitter mostly. Angela TC is my handle. I follow back, so if anybody wants to follow me, I would be very honored. That's really about it. I don't have any my husband just put the date and time at the convention up there. If you're in Michigan, you're welcome to join. It's open to the public, even if you're not a delegate. We'd love to see you. We're going to be throwing axes on Friday night. So,
oh,
yeah.
Hopefully not at each other.
You know, we're libertarians. You don't know. You don't know. So.
Most of, well, hey. I know I'm a libertarian, but are you guys libertarians?
Yeah. I'm the only real libertarian.
There you go. All right. And thank you. Your husband's name is Andrew, correct?
David.
David, sorry. David. Wow, too many Andrews floating around in the if it were. David, thank you for giving us the details that the folks can see there at the bottom of the screen this weekend, July 19th, 12 a.m. to July 20th. 12 p.m. So two full days, 48 full hours of fun and action, I am sure. Angela, thank you so much for joining us tonight on Facebook. Enjoyed having you on. Look forward to having you again in the future. Hody, as always, thank you for helping out and keeping me centered on this show. Really appreciate it, brother. And for everyone else out there, you're watching us on Grumblings Media, grumblingsmedia.com. Until next Thursday at the same time, same place. Peace, everyone.